The 70s mainstay America is our guest on the cafe today. Dewey Bunnell and Jerry Beckley are here, and there is much history. In fact, their latest album contains a second disc recording their hits from that history disc live. It's a full album side. That new album is called Here and Now. The cafe's Bruce Warren will talk with the band. But we started with a performance of an old and a new song, starting with the band's first single, A Horse with No Name.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rings. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La 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 la. Desert sun, my skin began to turn red. Then after 3 days in the desert fun, I was looking at a riverbed. And the story it told of a river that flowed made me sad to think it was dead. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La 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 la. After 9 days, I let the horse run free, 'cause the desert had turned to sea. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rings. The ocean is a desert with its life underground and the perfect disguise above. Under the cities lies a heart made of ground, but the humans will give no love. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. Well, in the desert, you can remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La la.
I sat here thinking about my heart and all of the places it came apart. There's just one thing that I need to know. Why am I always chasing the rainbow?
Get it.
I ran through the meadow looking does never act what it seems. Yes, there's always so far to go. Why am I always chasing the rainbow? Cause it just might help to point out the place where we went so wrong. The only color I'll use is blue. Why am I always chasing the rainbow?
Chasing the Rainbow, that is America playing live a song from their new album called Here and Now, produced by James Iha of Smashing Pumpkins and Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne. More music coming up. Dewey Bunnell and Jerry Beckley are here to talk with the Cafe's Bruce Warren. Work on the new album grew out of emails between the band and Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne. The album contains a number of songs from younger writers and bands. Bruce asked them how they became aware of the Fountains of Wayne.
Well, pop sensibility, of course. Those guys know how to craft a song. Chris, of course, the main singer. And there's some just wonderful stuff there. But it's not a, you know, you think of a pop song sometimes and it's kind of an encapsulated 3-minute thing. But there's a real craft to it, you know. And I think that's the thing that makes certain songs last. And Dewey and I have been, you know, we've always said the Beatles and the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson and stuff. And now, decades later, you know, people are holding Brian up as high as he really deserves to be, you know, one of our great.
And the songwriting is what it's all about. Anyway, that song is what's going to last long after you're gone. And so we've always taken that aspect pretty seriously. I mean, we really have tried to hone our skills over 35 years and try and keep pace with that kind of those standards, you know. And Adam certainly is skilled in all those departments, as Jerry said. And, you know, it felt really good, too. We got along real well right on first meeting. You know, there's no airs or no attitudes or anything. It's really roll up your sleeves and try and make some good music, you know. And that's basically the attitude we've always aspired to as well, you know.
What was so you recorded the new record? Now there's a bunch of different musicians on the album that sort of help out on some of the songs. Was there a core band that kind of did the record?
Yeah, we started with a really focused concept, which was, I mean, and I like this distinction. Both James and Adam were saying what they were trying to shoot for was a timeless sound as opposed to a retro sound. They would go back and reference a lot of our more famous albums, Homecoming and Holiday and stuff, to try and get the overall sound of that. But by sticking to a certain array of instruments, acoustic, you know, real pianos and things, we brought in Brian Young, who was Fountains of Wayne's drummer. And between Adam and I, played all the bass and stuff. So we started with a very tight focus so that you didn't, and this is something we learned from George Martin from all those years, so that you don't go flying off in a million directions. You end up with something really that sounds cohesive, like a well-knit album. As the word got out and as people started to hear about it, we started to bring in some incredibly cool people. And it wasn't, I don't want it to sound like a challenge, like, oh, we had so many, you know, offers, but we realized that we didn't want this to turn into a here's us and all our cool friends thing, you know. So we were very careful, and, you know, the people that came in were people who were truly fans that we were, you know, very fond of and stuff, and involved them, I think, in an integral way as opposed to just kind of a duet.
And also it was a newer bunch of guys, people that, frankly, I was not that familiar with, which was great. It was like new blood. It was, and these guys, both Adam and James, are a good decade younger than us. So it goes without saying that this was a younger bunch, a little different energy, different coming from a different place. As the project rolled along, we came up with this concept, you know, four of Jerry's songs, four of mine, and we'll do four outside material. That's in a nutshell. That's what it's boiled down to. All of those other stuff in the can, and we have other thoughts maybe down the road, but that's the way it has come out. And there's Adam's song Work to Do. Always love the Not a Surf song,
Golden,
My Morning Jacket song, and then Indian Summer. So those are the four outside things, and I think they all really shine.
Well, you guys seem really excited about this album. I mean, when you sit back and think about all the many highs that you've had over your career, I mean, it seems like you know, you have an album, a collection of great songs, the performances that, quite honestly, all this time has gone on, and it could be perceived as like no new musical genres ever have been invented since the time you guys made music in the 70s. Well, but that speaks to, I think, the essence of what you're about.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, too, we haven't had an album of new material for 5-6 years or something. Mm-hmm. So this is literally the first thing, the first project with new material in the new millennium, if you will. It's been one of those things, as with any veteran band like us, as the decades roll on, the projects become few and far between somewhat, even though we put 100 shows a year together on the road. We've never been off the road. That's our bread and butter kind of thing, and we've always enjoyed working on the road. But the recording thing, as many artists will tell you, it gets tougher and tougher to get a label, to get an ear, to get anybody to get involved. So a lot of things came together on this, which was it is exciting because, you know, you take a lot of stuff for granted in the 70s and 80s when you've got huge success and everybody's following you around and the shows are going great. And then as that tapers off, you're still creative, you're still writing. Jerry's got this state-of-the-art studio. He's writing constantly. And you want to be able to get that out to a broader audience, hopefully, and see what happens. So
it's a challenge even for the most successful musicians, because there's a kind of an Achilles heel thing for any personal, if you struggle with this, if you succeed, you're very busy with touring and stuff. And if you don't succeed, as you age, I mean, there's a certain stigma that rock and roll is fastened to youth and to angst and stuff. And as you get on and you marry and family and things, these other things come into your life. It doesn't really occur in the other arts. Nobody goes to a novelist and say, oh, you're still writing novels. Nobody goes to a painter and says, oh, you're Blue Period. Or you know what I mean? It's just inherent in this particular genre of the arts. So I take it personally, to be honest. I think, you know, well, I'm not going to bow down to that. I think I've got as much to say in my 50s as I did in my 40s. But that's the challenge. You've got to keep
move over, old guy.
You've got to keep the synapses open. You know, otherwise they do close off and you go, you know what? What's on TV? You know, and you pick up the remote. And that's true. And you screw yourself, frankly. Mm-hmm. And then you do become one of those acts that just goes out there and plays those 8 or 10 songs.
And, you know, historically we started when we were teenagers. So this is all we've really known our entire adult lives. And we've been very lucky and fortunate. This business has been great. And we're you know, happy that we're still around, frankly. But yeah, you still want to get in there and elbow
fresh
out some room, you know.
Right. So my wife has a question, and she wants to know. So your first album was called America, right? Mm-hmm. The next 5 or 6 albums all had
the letter H thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said to her, you know what? It never occurred to me. I said, yeah. She goes, go look at their discography. Uh-huh. So we have most of your albums at home. And sure enough, she was right. I hadn't thought of that.
It turned into, you know, it dawned on us, too. The first 3 or 4 were just accidental. In fact, the titles at the time actually did apply somewhat to the project. Homecoming was the second album. That was us coming back from England. We made the first in England, and it was subsequently retitled Horse with No Name, or at least they printed that on there after the hit. Then Hat Trick, the third album, the sports term, that would be 3, right? Holiday.
That's when we noticed it, I think.
That's
after
when
Hat
we kind
Trick.
Of started, well, this is something. It narrowed the field. And then we did try and apply. Hearts was made in San Francisco, whoopee. Hideaway was an album we did up in the Colorado Rockies at the Caribou Ranch back in the 70s. So each one did have a certain... then we got really cute with it. We had an album called Silent Letter. Get it? H. And then we had...
That was a silent album.
That was a silent record, yeah. Not many people heard that one.
Laugh about it now.
No, you know, we don't even know what number this album is. Right. I say every night a new album, and to be honest, at a certain point, with so many repackages and greatest hits, it's hard to say, well, that's a legit release. You got to count that one. It's from your label. But we're at somewhere between 26 and 30. A guy came the other day with a big display board, giving a lecture or something, and he had 99 different albums on the board. So, but he trades them with foreign, you know, releases and stuff, and so it was quite stunning to see this number.
That was another milestone, the box set. That's another reason we're excited about this record. A lot of times the box set can mean end of, that's it. You know, if you've got a box set out, just go sit down. You're done. So to get a new deal was kind of nice.
Talk about the business part of your careers. I mean, you know, I bring this up because we did an interview with Peter Frampton, you know, a while back. And,
yeah,
you
know,
you know, the guy was a millionaire at one point, and then he had basically no money left. I mean, were you guys cautious, aware, oriented to the business side of things?
We had an interesting thing. When we first came to Los Angeles, we went through a management change, and we switched to a company, David Geffen and Elliot Roberts. David Geffen was on this, you know, meteoric rise, who's now a billionaire, well-known billionaire, and owns a studio and stuff. But he put us together with a law firm and a business management firm that Dewey and I to this day are still with. And frankly, thank goodness.
Yeah, that was a stroke right there. From that moment on, we were at least being taken care of by a legitimate company. Doesn't mean we didn't override them and spend more than we should have or make some bad decisions, but at least they were our decisions.
Joke is we've tried to spend it but haven't been successful.
Yeah, no. We weren't. I think most of the accounting has been really good over
no,
the
no
years.
South American cattle tax write-offs or things that went bad. Touch wood, please.
No, I mean,
well,
you know,
still have to work. I mean, we're certainly not the Stones or anything, which I wouldn't mind being, but nevertheless,
but are they
we
happy?
Still work. We still work.
But, you know, this is such a major,
happy.
I mean,
no,
the issue
it's
around
common,
the business
thing.
Part of your career, I mean, you know, lots of people who are just new emerging artists, you know, they come through the radio station and they ask me, you know, well, what would you tell me, what kind of advice would you give me? And I say, well, you know, keep writing songs and also make sure you're on top of your business and own your own music.
I speak at Loyola at the campus in Los Angeles every semester, and I talk about this. I'm not necessarily just the financial aspect, but about all these decisions that you make, because they will be with you your entire life. And that is one of the huge ones. If you take, for example, a group that's maybe five or six guys and they think, oh, my God, we've hit the big time, we're on MTV, and the drummer happens to have not written one of the songs, you know, any of the songs, and within 18 months it's all over for these guys and they were world famous. I mean, it can really wrap up very quickly. And there's just some fundamental truths to that, you know, without clubbing the kids over the head, you know, it's really pretty good to understand those things, you know, and you
publishing and royalty rates, etc. You do need to have a handle on that. It was so easy when in our day we were those classic teenagers. Hey, we got a record deal. That's all we cared about. We're gonna have a record. Oh boy!
And we wrote the songs, you know.
Yeah, and invariably, you know, if you're not on top of it right then, it's a very complex sort of situation, publishing and licensing and writers and things, you know, which is where the lion's share of the dough is, if you will, if I can be so crass, as far as once the units are sold, the thing that goes on throughout, you know, perpetuity is the performance royalties.
It's relative. There's a catch-22 that, you know, a lot of these young kids will hear it, a mantra where the label will say, look, you know, don't worry about the expense of the recording. You'll get it back on the road. And the road will say, don't worry about the show. You'll get it back in the live show
is promoting the records. You'll get your dough out of the records.
And the records will say the other thing. You know, don't worry about it. You spend $2 million here. And these kids go in $1.5 million hawk on a video that, you know, nobody sees and stuff. Yeah. There's some classic errors.
Called recouping, which everybody needs to realize. When the record company says, oh, yeah, well we're going to pay for all that. We'll pick up the tab on the hotels and in the Hawaiian recording sessions and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the moment they will, but then it comes back out of royalties. It's recouped. Right. We've made a few things, we've made a lot of those errors.
I don't mean to sound like you know, we dodged those bullets. We learned a lot of things through experience. Yeah.
Right, but you also have a great history and lots of those top 10 hits, you know, which speaks ultimately to the music.
Time is going to be the answer to that. Right. You know, every week there's a top 10. Every year there are the top 10 things. You don't know, even with the hits you have, which ones of those are going to stick. And Du and I have been really blessed in that we've had quite a number of songs that are continually played to this day, decades later.
Thanks to Jerry Buckley and Dewey Bunnell from America. In a moment, they'll play one of those hits live for us. But first, here's another new song that they performed in our studios when they stopped by.
Two, Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed. So I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. But I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a good friend of mine. Well, I keep on thinking about your sister golden hair surprise, and I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in my eyes? I've been one more correspondent. I've been too hard to find. But it doesn't mean, girl, you ain't been on my mind. To fake it, I don't mind saying I just can't make it.
Sister Golden here, and that new song called Ride On from America. Thanks again to the band for stopping by and joining us today. The new album is called Here and Now, and our thanks also to Bruce Warren for that interview. Now, you think of America, you think of the 70s, and we're going to travel back, folks, to some guilty pleasures from the 70s when we get back here to the World Cafe.